Look, Star Wars isn't really science fiction. It's science fantasy. I think we've all heard this debate somewhere or another. It can be galling and frustrating. It mostly gets nowhere. But today, we're gonna crack this wide open. Let's talk a little bit more about genre.
Y'all heard our last interview with Seth. We discussed it more from a perspective of kind of an author kind of creating work and kind of working through their use of genre. This time, I want to talk about it more at a sort of broader, higher critical sort of perspective with Dave. We've been arguing about this for a little while on the basis of a series of comments we actually got on a video I put, Make Science Fiction Weird Again, where a commenter had said, this is really more science fantasy, what you're describing. And that launched us into a long discussion where we started breaking down how does genre work? How does it fit here or there? What makes sense? My name is James, and you're joining us today on the Worldcraft Club podcast, a show for writers, dungeon masters, and other creatives who want to create rich, immersive settings for their audience to get lost in time and time again. I've got Dave here with me, and Seth is occupying the producer chair today. Dave, why don't you just, how do we want to kick this off? Do we want to frame the argument that we've been having, or?
Star Wars is science fiction. Fight me.
That's a good place for us to start. All right, so essentially what it came to was I made this video, and it was about Dune, and it was about how Dune brings in these very sort of trippy and strange science fiction elements. And like science fiction lately has been very much like rocket thrusters. There's like the emphasis on the science part of the science fiction, and it's been like Iron Man. They've sought to explain why. And like
in the first movie.
Yeah, well, right. Even in Thor, though, like they had this idea of other dimensions, and they were like, they wanted to scientify it. And I was like, no, make it weird. Like more Thor Ragnarok, less other Thor movies.
Dark World.
Yeah. Well, everybody wants less Dark World.
No, Dark World is better than its reputation.
Oh, you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would give it like, I actually like rewatching Dark World more recently.
You don't hate
it. I was like, this is a solid movie.
Yeah.
It's not one of the greatest movies in the MCU.
It holds up.
It's a good movie.
Okay, fair enough.
Christopher Eccleston.
Yeah.
It was unfortunate that his character was flat, but...
That can be a writing problem.
Yeah. But he did a good job. He was menacing.
So anyway, like, genre, right? And figuring that out. Like, it is actually like really tricky. And that whole thing of, you know, Star Wars is science fiction, fight me. There's loads of people that will go in and say, no, it's actually science fantasy or just strict fantasy. You've got a chosen one. You've got space wizards with laser swords. They don't really explain the technology.
Space wizards with laser swords.
And this really breaks down the difference in our views, right? In some ways. And to be fair, this is a narcissism of small differences sort of thing. Like, I think we're in agreement with a lot of this stuff for the most part. But essentially, what I would argue science fiction is, looking at genres, is science fiction usually has humans as they are now advancing along a certain path technologically that creates the world and the core tensions and conflicts that exist in that world. So an example of science fiction was Arrival, right? Like where the aliens arrive. It's not just a clever name. And they talk with the different characters. And it's talking about the impact that language has and this idea that, spoilers, it's been out for a million years though, but like spoilers, it's like the language allows you to manipulate time functionally or understand time differently. And that's science fiction-y because it's like, what if this happened or that happened? Whereas Star Wars is like, what if the laser goes pew pew? And that's kind of it. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not posing those questions. But there's no scientific theme.
Is a special incantation, like a special combination of syllables that allows you to control time, that's not fantasy?
Well,
like they just learn magic from like otherworldly beings.
Aliens teach humans magic. Like badly defining movies, right? Alien teaches magic to humans.
That honestly, but that sounds, I've not seen the movie myself.
Oh, you haven't?
No.
It's really, really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
that's kind of the thing. Like,
yeah, that's a really fair point.
To an extent.
Very fair point.
To an extent, I'm less interested in that particular brand of science fiction. Yeah, there's a certain kind of science fiction that I think functions best as a short story. And I've read some Asimov. I have enjoyed his short stories. I have endured a couple of his novels.
Yeah.
Because once you've, like, broken the elevator pitch down into, and you've explored it, explored the technology, explored the concept and the format of a short story, you're done. I've not read a large body of his work, but I don't find his characters interesting or compelling the way that I find Han Solo and Luke Skywalker interesting and compelling.
Yeah.
And it may be that they're just too realistic. They're too much like real people, or almost like they're too much like what people assume other people are like. They're just boring. Mm. And that has a big impact on what I want to read. So if you're so into the technology and the large scale implications of it that you get too far away from that intimate character interaction, you might be falling under science fiction, but not the subgenres of science fiction that I like.
I think this is a point that bears drilling down on a bit here. Some of this is really just a straight difference of taste to some degree. I will readily admit that I like a bit of pretense in the work I read and imbibe. I like stuff to be heady and thought-provoking, and sometimes that puts the characters as secondary to me. Good characters are good characters. I'm not trying to say that I don't care at all, but there's a sense that the broader implications of a setting or technology being explored is a foundational element of the type of science fiction that I enjoy. When I finish a movie or a book, the joy comes, in part for me, by sitting with it for a time and thinking about it. Dave, on the other hand, is more driven by the wonder of the science fiction, the blood, guts, and high adventure present in much of the genre. Now we're going to dive into some more nitty-gritty.
This discussion is as old as the term science fiction, right? Because it's a term that doesn't start to get everyday normal usage until about 100 years ago.
Yeah,
it's not that old. Now, you'll find instances of it before that from the 1800s, and it's being used to describe the work of Jules Verne and H.G. Wells in particular.
Yeah.
Sometimes Poe gets roped in there, but I've never seen Poe write about technology. Like, maybe he did to some extent.
It can also be like technology. But the thing that's interesting is when we talk about technology in science fiction, we often limit it to physical material technology and like the physical sciences and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not necessarily commenting on Poe here. I think that's interesting. But oftentimes it's societal technologies that have actually advanced us much further than a physical tech. Sometimes they go along together. But
right.
Like determining, for example, a societal technology would be representative government. That was a game changer. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And that's societal tech in a way. So I don't know, maybe.
But
maybe
is that really
that genre?
Science fiction? Is there such a thing as social science fiction? Like that's kind of, but that's the sort of the point. It's like these edges are very blurry. So you're in good company with your argument.
Yeah.
And it goes back to like the early days of like the pulp magazines that we talk about sometimes.
Yeah. Like Hugo, what if there was a cavern underneath the earth that had a bunch of dinosaurs?
The thing is like we think about that in terms of pulp, and it was pulp. John Carter, A Princess of Mars, was first published serially in magazines as pulp stories. But there were other magazines that were more deliberately aimed towards the kind of storytelling you're talking about, starting in like the 20s. Hugo Gernsback actually wanted to make, and that's who the Hugo Awards are named after.
Yeah.
He wanted to start a magazine. He called it initially, I've been trying to practice this, scientifiction.
Oh,
like it's
okay.
Scientific. Yeah. And fiction portmanteaued into one word. And it never caught on for obvious reasons. That was originally what he wanted to call it. But you might have heard of the magazine that he ended up actually publishing 2 years later, Amazing Stories.
Yes.
Amazing Stories was specifically designed, and as was Galaxy and a couple other pulp magazines that were all short stories, were specifically designed to do these hard science fiction type things, these stories that were really based in reality. In fact, the first issue of Galaxy makes a point on the back of the jacket that this is not a place to read Western set in space.
Yeah.
I actually have two parallel paragraphs of stories that do not appear in the book.
Yeah.
That are like, here's where we just overlaid some science fiction-y words on a cowboy story, and here's the cowboy story unadulterated. We're not going to give you that. But I want to read both of those stories. Like, even though that, in some circles, that became what science fiction was, the term does go back to like Verne.
Yeah.
And if you read 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, yes, he is talking about futuristic ideas about submarines. Submarines were being prototyped then, but there was nothing of that sort. So that is considered by many, if not all, to be one of the foundational science fiction novels.
Yeah.
But that was an adventure story about a sailor caught up, like basically who gets press ganged by a submarine captain.
Yeah.
And that doesn't fit into the more hard-nosed version of what we called science fiction later, even though those were some of the first stories, those what at the time were sometimes referred to as scientific romances.
Yeah.
Like those ideas of that, and romance and pulp are like practically interchangeable. So when we say romantic in the literary sense, we're actually hearkening back to when Latin was the common language.
Yeah.
And it's what popular stories were published in. They were romantic stories.
Yeah.
So like they were the pulp of their day.
Yeah.
And so like those pulpy, adventure driven, maybe melodramatic or even soppy stories, they have always been there and they are foundational to what became science fiction. Like, right, that term just percolated up naturally as the genre was developing.
Yeah.
So I think that's what Seth was talking about in the last discussion. These tags become useful after some kind of art has been brought into the world.
Yeah.
And I look at it as I have what I would call almost like the blockbuster theory of genre.
Yeah.
What section do you put it in a home video store?
Yeah.
And for you kids at home who don't remember this time, we used to go when we wanted to see a movie that we didn't own, we had to go to a physical building. And they had physical copies of these movies and they would all be broken up into sections. Now we don't have to do that because it's all digitally cataloged on our various streaming services. So it can be cross-tagged with as many genres as you want. But at some point in history, like someone had to actually look at a movie and be like, what sticker am I going to put on the spine of this box that contains this weird plastic thing that has film in it? And you put it into another machine and then a video shows up. It's all very arcane, strange.
Yeah.
But you, if you can only put Star Wars in one box,
yeah,
it goes in science fiction.
Yeah.
There's a spaceship on the cover. Yes, it utilizes fantasy tropes to great effect. Like, and
the chosen
I'll
one,
even,
or like the Dark Lord. Or, yeah.
But like all those archetypes, they don't have to be from a fantasy setting because you can see a lot of those archetypes as well in a Western or something.
Trope. It's tropes. You're basically looking at a collection of tropes and you're squinting at it. And like, I don't find myself really in strong disagreement. And I think one thing that's interesting is you talk about like Asimov's books being a slog sometimes. And like, I think some science fiction readers view that as like, you know, you've really done sci-fi.
Yeah.
You have slogged through this guy's
and I don't say this,
something like that, you know? Like,
I don't say this as like a complete pejorative. It's like a way of gatekeeping.
Yeah, it's a badge
like,
of honor.
There's a cost of entry to be a science fiction fan.
To be a real science fiction
fan. You have to be willing to read this stuff.
To be at least on your second reading of Dune.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
But it's just, that's not all that science fiction is.
Yeah.
And so like,
it's true.
Like George Lucas, who I have a lot of respect for, I think he is a really great creative. I don't think he's been right about a whole lot since the 1980s in terms of where he wanted to take some of his properties.
Yeah.
But like at the same time, he gave us the original Star Wars trilogy. I would never take anything away from him.
He gave us the Cronut. It's enough. You don't have to make any more. You don't have to give anything back, George. You gave us Star Wars. Yeah, sorry, carry on.
But yeah, he actually said Star Wars was never meant to be a science fiction film.
Yeah.
It was a fantasy and a space opera. Okay, look up space opera.
Yeah.
It's a subgenre
of science fiction.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's hard. Everybody's opinions on it are going to be different. And even as you talk about, I'm fixated on this thing of enduring the greats with this. It's like, it's like you go back and it's real science fiction if you really had to suffer to read through. I've even read like recent ones, Three Body Problem. I would almost create my little subgenre of science fiction. And the corner that I think about is just conceptual science fiction. That's heavy concept driven stuff. Like Three Body Problem, I felt was like this, though some of it might've been lost in translation on my reading. I found it quite dry, but the ideas in it were really neat. And I was like, this is a phenomenal concept. And I would walk away from the book like thinking about what I just read. And that was the same with Arrival. Fantasy doesn't seem to pose the question, who do we become when the wizards deliver magic, temporal magic to us? Whereas science fiction sits with the characters in a way that fantasy doesn't. Or doesn't appear to, I should say. And it's not exclusive.
Like, right.
I'm not trying to draw hard lines here. It's all blurry. But I guess what I'm trying to capture in some ways is the way science fiction makes me feel and the stuff it evokes. Like, this is definitely something that we talk about a lot in the Worldcraft Club. And like, really, in that way, we're talking about the same thing. You know what I mean? Look at it, I see sci-fi, and I'm like, there's a certain subgenre of sci-fi that when I read it or watch it or imbibe it in some way, I walk away from it pondering. Like, I read Consider Phlebas, which I want to say Ian Banks, which would actually thread the needle between both of the things we're talking about here, where you have a really good story, but it's told in the backdrop of really interesting, high implication science fiction. So it's like a bunch of humans live on orbitals that are basically curated by servitor robots who run everything.
Okay.
And so called the culture. And it takes place in the backdrop of a war in which another alien race that has a genetic superiority complex and a deep spiritualism goes, robots shouldn't rule us, and they just go to war with them. And they know they're going to lose the war because the way the culture is arranged is just so dang efficient. Nobody can even figure out where the culture really lives because they don't have borders per se, because they live in these giant orbitals. So they just go places. It's just so amorphous that they can't quite crush it. But they've also never been to war. But this other race is highly warlike, and so it's all this long-term catching up thing, and they base this all around a crew of misfits who are traveling around in the middle of the war, and there's an agent of the culture on the ship, and there's an agent of the alien race, and like there's a bit of a tango going on between them as they figure this out, but they're also caught in the middle of it, and so they tell a human story on the backdrop of really interesting questions about the role of AI and what makes a human, and like exactly the sort of questions I like in science fiction, but done in such a way that it's actually really interesting, in a way that like I would make the argument, and I know I'm going to be treading on eggshells here because I recognize Asimov's like greatness in the role that he played in science fiction, but I do find his prose pretty dry. And like, I think you're right. It's a lot of hard science fiction that asks those sort of big, deep exploratory questions winds up in the same boat that many nonfiction books do. You could fit this on a pamphlet, but no one can sell pamphlets. You know what I mean?
Right.
15 minutes of useful information. Seth summarized the book for me the other day, and I was like, I don't need to read the book. Mostly because Seth's thoughts come out in complete whole sentences. He writes the back of books when he just speaks. So he just explained what the book was about, and I was like, I feel no need to read this book. I feel like you've just told me everything I need to know. That's the same with a lot of these science fiction novels. They make better short stories. And it's interesting that they began the hard science fiction, right? The people who started out going, this is not a Western.
Yes.
Don't mistake us for a Western. They did short stories based on big concepts that they were exploring.
Yes.
And that was the high science fiction.
I think that's the ideal format for hard science fiction.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
The Noldo elves of science fiction.
I want to slow down here because I really like where we arrived. There are going to be multiple subgenres of different big tent genres like science fiction. We have Dave's blockbuster video breakdown. What do you think of when you think of science fiction? Usually spaceships, lasers, exploring strange planets, aliens, and the like. These broad sweeping stories are engaging and inspire wonder. We then have high science fiction, as we've termed it here, that is more speculative and theme-based. Does each genre perhaps suit a different format? In this next part of the conversation, Dave breaks down a little of his understanding of science fiction and how the aesthetic elements are an important part of the story.
So you have a very like thematic appreciation of science fiction.
Yeah.
Where when you come to science fiction, you're looking for a certain type of story, a certain type of like big picture social change, social friction based on technology.
Yeah.
When I come to science fiction, I'm looking for robots and spaceships.
And spaceship fighters.
Yeah. I want Top Gun, but with more lasers.
Additional lasers.
Yeah.
Please.
And it's not enough lasers yet. Like whatever you're envisioning.
There's a threshold.
There's more lasers.
The shark
that need
cavalry charge in Aquaman, where it's people riding sharks shooting lasers from tridents at each other.
Yeah.
I want to see that, but in space. Now it's science fiction.
Yeah, and I mean, we could do a whole nother thing about comic books and what those universes are.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're a
There are space sharks in Thor. Right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I'm sure there are. Somewhere. Why not? I am confident that we could find space sharks if we perused Marvel's catalog enough. I can't think of any off the top of my head. Yeah. But yeah, like I think there's that's one way to understand science fiction is that thematic side. Tend to look at it more from the aesthetic side. But I think that both are useful. I think that both tie back into that idea of what am I going to call this when I'm trying to sell it to somebody?
Yeah.
What part of the home video store does this VHS belong in?
Yeah. How do I shorthand this?
Yeah.
Yell out a car window at someone.
Yes. Yeah. And there was an interesting essay, and I'm going to bring Lewis into this again because I just have to do that once per episode, apparently.
It's part of your brand. Don't let it trap you. Carry on.
I can switch to Chesterton.
Conveyor into Chesterton.
Yeah. But yeah, there's this essay that Lewis wrote called On Story. And in it, he gets into talking about a bunch of different properties, basically, or a bunch of different stories that he's enjoyed, why he's enjoyed them, what makes them particular. And he says, this might not be for everybody. This is the way I see things. He was a professor in these areas, so he had a lot of conversations with people that disagreed with him on it.
Yeah.
But his kind of point was like, you cannot take the elements away from a story and have it remain the same story. You can't take the aesthetic elements out and have it remain the same. Yeah. And he talks specifically about fear of death, imminent life-threatening danger, and the point of the story cannot just be that emotional thrill of like the character's about to die. Just the threat of death doesn't necessarily evoke the same thing as threat of death from a particular thing. And so he gives a bunch of examples. One was an adaptation that he watched of King Solomon's Mines. And he despised the film rendition. And he talks about why. And he talks about the way that it changes a story to put it on camera. He actually says in that essay, there's death in the camera. Just an old school guy.
Yeah.
And what they did with that rendition of King Solomon's Mines is the climax of the book, the heroes are buried alive in a tomb with a bunch of like dead kings. And the kings are all, and it's not like a living dead thing, they're just dead. But there's all these mummified former rulers like standing in a circle around them, and they're just trapped underground, and they're threatened to die by exposure of some kind. Like they will suffocate or they will starve, and they're trapped in this just temple of death. And it's just, it evokes certain emotions in you to see the heroes subjected to that kind of thing.
Yeah.
In the film version, there is a earthquake followed by a volcanic eruption.
Yeah.
And it makes for better film.
Yeah.
But it also utterly changes the experience of the visitant.
Yeah.
To have the threat of death be crushing and burning and we have to run versus the cold, like,
slow reality of suffocation.
Yeah. And so, like, now that's not an issue where he's changed the genre, but I think that you can very easily attach that then to Star Wars.
Yeah.
If you made Han Solo the captain of a sail ship and a smuggler, it would totally change the vibe. It would change the aesthetic to the point where you have changed the story. It's not Star Wars anymore. You can imagine the Death Star as some kind of mountain fortress, and there's a canyon they have to go through, and they're riding on wyverns or something, and wizards are throwing cannonballs instead of the turrets shooting lasers at them. You can imagine all these things. You can change it, and you can tell, you can keep a skeleton, but you can put a totally different paint job on it. Well, you've just entirely changed the story. The vibes there are totally different. The fact that they are not fighter pilots in space anymore, that they're some kind of wyvern cavalry or something, would utterly change what Star Wars is. Star Wars is immutably in a science fiction, I will happily say science fantasy setting.
Yeah.
It is science fiction. It is also fantasy. these things are okay. Like, these are not exclusive categories.
Yeah. And I think that's a lot of it, is the genres they get muddy. And I think the thing that I keep coming back to is, with, as with all categories, they're useful until they're not useful. And that's the thing, is I don't think it does to get too tied up in it. I think a lot of times there's a gatekeepy vibe. Oh, is it real science fiction? If it was real science fiction, I'd be bored while I was reading it. Like, you know, and
hey, you can say that Star Wars is bad science fiction. If that's your argument, okay, we can talk about that.
That's right, but excluding the category imbues you with a sense of, it's, oh, I get to decide that. You know what I mean? That's me.
I understand, like, why a certain group, like, there's a certain group that likes hard science fiction.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I don't want to take that away from anybody. I just don't think that group owns the term science fiction, especially since it does predate them and was used to describe scientific romances like Jules Verne.
Yeah.
Like, you don't own that word. But this really does just become like these semantic gatekeepy, that's our word argument. I don't know that it's helping anyone. I don't know that it's particularly useful. Like you're saying, like, these terms are useful till they're not.
Yeah.
And when it just becomes these like internecine fights of, no, you're a fantasy fan and that's a space opera, that's not really science fiction. So, yeah, but like everyone in the culture, like, you just do like man on the street kind of things, like, what genre is Star Wars? People are going to say science fiction. Like, you might find that 1 in 100 guy that's going to be like, actually.
And it comes down to this whole thing. To me, it's like the debate, right? So there is the basic received wisdom, right? Whatever you heard as a kid, you have, that's the word you use. Whether you had people around you saying GIF or GIF, you say one or t'other. And as you go along, you then enter the sort of mid-tier intellect ground where you start to form reasons why you were right and your received wisdom is right, or you challenge it, right? It's one or the other. You deconstruct it and you start going, you know, the people that actually created GIF used to say choosy programmers choose GIF and they meant it to be a soft J, and don't really they get to decide? And someone else comes in and goes, I don't know, do you say giraffical instead of graphical? It's graphical interchange format or whatever, and you don't say that. And then you respond with, do you say scuba instead of scuba because it's self-contained underwater breathing apparatus? And it's,
don't even get me started on laser.
I know, right? Last year, it's not, all right? Signal. Anyway.
Signal is an acronym?
S is one of the acronyms in laser,
yes.
Right?
Okay.
See, anyway,
sorry.
It's like, you know, the point is, those debates are like fun and they can be interesting, but they don't really get you anywhere, because at the end of the day, once you've received your full dose of wisdom and you've gone through the phase of just arguing,
and you've been sophomoric,
and you've become a senior, you just go, you know what, most people say GIF, and you just accept it. You accept the received wisdom, and I think you get into this thing where you start and you go, oh yeah, Star Wars, that's sci-fi. And then someone goes, well, actually. And they go into a long discussion about the origins of sci-fi. And
the problem is that Han Solo has a personality, so it can't be science fiction.
The problem is, when I read it, I find it interesting. And it's all this kind of stuff. And then eventually they get to the other end and then they just point at it and go, that's sci-fi. That's when you've reached you've reached maturity. Like, it's when you can just easily, when you can hold the debate in an open hand. It's nerd etiquette is like where we need to arrive as a culture.
Because creators don't necessarily approach things as, I am going to write X kind of novel.
Yeah.
These are just tags we put on after, and they do serve a purpose, but it comes down to, there was, back in the 60s, the Supreme Court was hearing an argument about obscenity laws.
Yeah.
And how do you define obscenity?
Yeah.
And one of the justices says, I know it when I see it.
Yeah.
And that's really, that's how genre works.
Yeah.
Like, you can be uncomfortable with that if you like, but as much as we want to put it all into hard and fast boxes, what is science fiction? I know it when I see it.
Yeah.
I've seen some really interesting articles. One of them was actually used that connection between that
Supreme Court
quote and science fiction. One definition I saw for science fiction, I can't remember who it was credited to, but was what we're talking about when we use the word. That is unhelpful.
But it's also accurate.
There's so much like good wisdom just behind the useful until it's not useful, which is like a useless statement until it isn't. And like that's like the kind of tricky thing.
The tautological society of tautology.
Basically, genre is useful until it's not. Don't let yourself get too tied down and too married to the idea of a given genre. Certainly when you're reviewing or critiquing work, but also really when you're creating it. Don't let those boundaries tie you down and operate in the way that you want to. Seth had said in the prior episode, pick your tropes and work with them. And that's really what you're actually exploring with this. Don't get stuck in that sophomoric phase. I think in this as well, we explored a little bit of nerd etiquette, right? When we're in these discussions, it's important to hold them in an open hand and remember that your definitive take on things is going to probably have some challenges to it. And a lot of times there's a lot of good received wisdom in the community. I know that's science fiction because I see it sci-fi, and you can make the argument that it's science fantasy as much as you want, but at the end of the day, people are just going to point at it and go, lasers, and we're done. That's science, right? That's where I kind of want to close this out. This has been another episode of the Worldcraft Club. I'm James. For Dave, Seth on the cameras over there, and editor AJ, probably in Valheim. Good night. So continuing some discussions on genre. No, you don't like that? Seth's like shaking his head. Why wouldn't I look at you? You're wearing one of those fruit hats that the ladies wear on the front of those cans.
It doesn't really match the kilt.
I know. It's a bizarre look.